Hello, this is Beth Ludwig from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from the Ladies' Home Journal, May 2010 issue. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. May is the month to salute the soldiers. Show your support by wearing the classic Memorial Day poppy. The American Legion Auxiliary distributes these paper flowers in exchange for donations to veterans and their families. Ladies' Home Journal inspired the tradition. The poem In Flanders Fields, which described poppies growing in cemeteries where World War I casualties were buried, ran in the magazine in 1980. Reader Monia Mitchell was so moved that she helped lobby to have the poppy declared the national symbol of remembrance of fallen soldiers. You can also honor the troops by doing one of these four things. First, giving blood to the armed services. Visit militaryblood.dod.mil for more information and to find a donation center near you. Two, aiding soldiers' kids. Help fund a class project at a military-serving public school. Go to lhj.com/donorschoose. Or donate $5.31 on 531 to Remind, remind.org, which provides medical support and more to troops returning from war. Or send a note of encouragement to a soldier via Operation Write Home. That is OperationWriteHome.org, OperationWriteHome.org. Help to support the soldiers and veterans in the month of May. Go for it. Are you good at setting goals, but bad at following through? Time to stop putting your ambitions on hold and start making your dreams happen. This article is by Marjorie Rosen. I wish I had a shiny nickel for every time I have announced with absolute conviction that I was ready to sign up for a fresher class in French. I used to be pretty good, not exactly fluent, but proficient enough to carry on a conversation without embarrassing myself. I'd even minored in French in college. Still on vacation with my daughter in France 6 years ago, I was so tongue-tied that I couldn't even ask a restaurant owner if I could use his phone to call a taxi. Ask me today if I've signed up for that French class, and the answer would be, no, not yet, but I will. I really will. Many of us drown in a sea of good intentions, whether the goal is to spend less, exercise more, stop smoking, start a diet, polish a resume, or return to school, we often know exactly what we want to do, and we know why we should do it. We simply don't. Even worse, we sometimes do precisely the opposite. Psychologists call this cognitive dissonance. The tension you feel when your actions or inactions don't match up with your beliefs or self-image. The rest of it. Us call it waffling, rationalization, procrastination. The result is the same. You stay gridlocked in a chronic state of dissatisfaction, indecision, and guilt. What's holding you back? It may be that going after a goal, worthy though it may be, is scary. What if you don't make it? How will life change if you do? Or maybe somewhere deep down you feel you don't deserve to succeed or are racked by self-doubt. Perfectionism may also play a role. If you've got that hard-working type A personality, you're probably afraid of looking foolish. Rather than have others think less of you if you try something and fail, you'll rattle off a list of perfectly plausible excuses to avoid trying at all. I really want to start painting again, But with the kids out for school for the summer, how can I do it? It doesn't have to be this way. In fact, the expert solution for achieving your goals may sound so simple it seems it couldn't work, but they are grounded in serious research. The most perilous part lies between the time you make a plan in your head and actually take the first step of following through, says Timothy Seichel, Ph.D., a psychology professor at Carleton University in Ottawa. Once you begin, you find that even a small step forward has a spillover effect, ramping up the achievement in other areas of your life. But before you can move forward, you need to understand what's holding you back. Number one, you're waiting for that perfect moment. For many women, fear of change, of failure, of something new, keeps us stuck in jobs we don't like or relationships that don't work. Change of any kind means facing those fears, so many of us delay taking the first step by telling ourselves the time's just not right. Take Ellie, a textile designer who had worked for years for a critical, overbearing boss. She loves her job, but he makes her miserable. She knows she deserves a happier situation, yet she can't find the time to polish her resume. I'm just not in the mood, she says, but tomorrow I'll make a few phone calls. Every day there's another perfectly good reason why she can't get to it. Ellie has convinced herself that she'll make more headway in her job hunt if she waits until she's in the mood. It's a common delay tactic. The truth is, no one likes to look for a new job. If you wait until you feel like it, you'll never do it. Experts in cognitive therapy know that feelings often follow behaviors. The simple act of trying builds confidence, which in turn fuels motivation and momentum, says Caroline Miller, author of Creating Your Best Life, The Ultimate Life List. Whether it's scheduling a doctor's appointment, paying bills on time, reading a certain number of chapters each night, or beginning a job hunt, you can kickstart the process by outlining a specific strategy for how, when, and where you're going to accomplish a goal. What's more, if you write down your plan strategies, you significantly increase your chance of success. You remove the ambivalence. You're no longer facilitating between will I, should I. Follow through often enough with your plan, and you will create a new set of behaviors. Ellie's strategy should be, when I leave work on Monday, I'll print out my resume and spend 30 minutes every night updating it. Next week, I'll make at least 2 phone calls to people in my field or either meet them for coffee. She should also tell a trusted friend about her goal, since that pal can keep her accountable and spur her on when she starts to slide. Number two, when your enthusiasm fades, so do you. Is that treadmill you bought a year ago still sitting idle, despite your wholehearted belief that you would use it? You're not alone. Jillian, a nurse practitioner, knows she needs to exercise. For the first few weeks after she purchased a top-of-the-line machine, she did. But that was months ago, and every night as she settles onto the couch, she's flooded with guilt and wonders why she never does what she tells her own patients to do. The next time that you're in Jillian's shoes, there are simple ways you can re-energize yourself. Let's say you're driving home from work thinking you should go to the gym, but you pull into the driveway instead. Taking advantage of what researchers called primes, which are images, words, or situations that subconsciously prompt you to think or act in a specific way, can give you the push you need. Think of the primes as cues that influence your thoughts, even though you're unaware of them. Athletes use primes all the time. Michael Phelps tattooed Olympic rings on his hip to spur his push for gold. Sports psychologists post words like success and win in training gyms. Some people have found that changing their cell phone ring or computer screen saver turns a why should I do this attitude and why not do it. For instance, Jillian might vow to go for a 30-minute run 4 mornings a week. To get into an exercise mindset, she should lay out her work clothes, one prime, so she's ready to go as soon as she wakes up. Placing a pedometer another prime on her nightstand so she can strap it on right away will give her another nudge. People walk 2,000 more steps a day when they use a pedometer, says Miller. You think, gee, only 5 minutes more and I'll hit a mile? I can do that. Keeping an exercise log will also boost your confidence and keep you going. Joining a walking club or tennis league can help too, because you know that other people are counting on you, which can be a big motivator. 3, you're stymied by self-doubt. Though it may sound obvious, experts cite self-efficacy, the deep-seated belief that you can achieve what you set out to do, as one of the make-it-or-break factors in achieving success. Without self-confidence, it's hard to stay motivated, and it's all too easy to find reasons why you still haven't done what you set out to do. That's what keeps Carrie stuck. Formerly a fourth-grade teacher, she had planned to return to work once her kids left for college, but that was 3 years ago. Though she talks about it endlessly, whenever she starts to formulate a plan, she winds up thinking, who am I kidding? I haven't worked for so long. Who's going to hire me at my age? Besides, most schools have a hiring freeze now. Disappointed in herself, she fills her days with random errands and activities, all the while worrying about why she's no closer to figuring out the next chapter in her life. Like Carrie, many women are gridlocked by self-defeating thoughts. Anything is grist for the mill, families, marriages, kids, careers, or in Carrie's case, the lack of one. But overthinking can be an endless and crippling exercise. One thought leads to a cascade of others that reinforce a sense of failure and drain so much of your time and energy that you can barely take action. Obsessing like this also fuels depression, which clouds your ability to think clearly. Carrie needs to be more patient with herself and learn how to brainstorm and evaluate ideas without harping on them. It's hard, but not impossible. Overthinkers can do it by recalling and savoring past accomplishments and obstacles they overcame. Carrie might say, I was good. I was a good, empathetic teacher. I didn't think I could, but I connected with the difficult students that other teachers gave up on. I really enjoyed working with those kids. If you find yourself questioning your confidence in your ability to do what it takes to reach a goal, it's also critical to craft a precise timeline of the small but reasonable steps you can take. If you hope to start working again after a prolonged time off, for instance, networking, online or in person, is critical. Call formal colleagues who continued in your profession, as well as those who used their skills to move into a new area. By attending job fairs or conferences, you'll get a clearer sense of your own interests and abilities, which will help you make better decisions. 4, your to-do list is doing you in. Finally, many women don't realize that they are their own worst enemy, saying yes to everything and everyone. But overcommitting can be an avoidance tactic. When you're so busy doing things for others, you don't have to face the harder task of taking care of yourself. In a futile effort to accomplish all her goals, Lisa, an at-home mom, makes lists. She thinks she's super organized, but at the end of her crazy days, she's dismayed at how few of the tasks she actually got done and how little time she has left for herself. To get moving, Lisa needs to remind herself that there's a right way and a wrong way to make to-do list. You might spend a half an hour drawing up the list, then sit on your laurels, says Dr. Seichel. The list itself becomes the day's achievement and an excellent way to avoid work. Simple changes can make the difference. If your list, like Lisa, is filled with stuff dictated by others, ask, whose goal is this anyway? You decided what goes on your list, nobody else. Change your have-tos into want-tos, and you'll begin to feel that you actually have a choice in the matter. Also, consider deleting anything that has been on your list forever. You would have done it by now if it was really important. So au revoir, French class. Then instead of a to-do list, you have I did it list. And that's a great feeling. now for the Answer Lady section. This month, our wise and witty expert offers advice on how to deal with impolite dinner guests, a frumpy-looking friend, and a sister who's grieving. First question. My friend has been looking for a job for months. I know it's competitive out there, but I think she'd stand a better chance if her wardrobe wasn't so frumpy. How can I bring this up? Answer. Believe it or not, I recently found myself on the receiving end of a similar situation. One of my friends told me that I might have better luck in the romance department if I traded my baggy mom jeans for some sexy fitted ones. It wasn't exactly easy to hear, and at first I brushed it off as a superficial suggestion. But ultimately, I bought new jeans and actually scored a few dates. So my advice to you is don't hold back. You won't come off as critical if you say, I bet you'd feel more confident going into those interviews if you wore a really great outfit. Why don't we go to the mall and shop for a new pencil skirt and cardigan? If she says she's tight on a budget, suggest a trip to an upscale consignment shop. Or if you're the same size, offer to lend her some clothes. Question. My sister just had a miscarriage, and she's devastated. I know Mother's Day will be hard for her. What can I do to help? Answer. For women who've endured a pregnancy loss or who have fertility issues, just seeing the word mother plastered all over the place for most of April and May can be extremely trying. The most useful thing you can do is to give your sister the chance to talk. Call her. Tell her you're thinking about her and mention that you realize how hard all the attention on Mother's Day must be. Then follow her lead. She may just want to ignore the occasion completely, or maybe she'd like to do something with you that day, see a movie, or go for a long bike ride to take her mind off. Unless your sister has ruled it out, it's fine to send her flowers or a card to mark the holiday. You can actually find greeting cards that are tailored to this situation. Go to your card shop. Whatever step she decides to take, she'll know you're there and that you're thinking of her. Our last question. Whenever my neighbors come over for dinner, they stay way too late. Is there a polite way to nudge them out the door? Answer. The next time you invite them over, preempt the problem by mentioning both the start and end times of the evening. Why don't you come at around 7? That will give us plenty of time to hang out, since I'd like to wrap it up by 9:30. When the hour comes, mention the time and say, wow, how did it get to be so late? Then start clearing the table. If you want, you can say something like, the kids have an early soccer game tomorrow, or I've been up since 6 and I'm wiped out. With luck, they'll take the hint. If not, for your next get-together, arrange to meet them at a restaurant where you can end the evening on your own timetable. Pet smarts. They can make you happy, keep you fit, even lower your blood pressure. Find out why owning a dog or a cat is a prescription for good health. They help your heart. Simply petting a dog or a cat can lower your blood pressure. Stroking a snake works too, one study found, but probably only among people who own snakes. Holding a pet triggers a relaxation response, explains Alan Beck, director of the Center for the Human Annual Animal Bond at Purdue University. It helps you to stay focused on the present as opposed to dwelling on the past or worrying about the future. And cuddling with furry friends can give you a chemical boost by releasing the feel-good brain chemical serotonin and dopamine. Pet owners also tend to have lower triglyceride and cholesterol levels, according to a study published in the Medical Journal of Australia. Pets boost immunity. Sick as a dog? Maybe it's time to get one. Petting a dog can up your levels of immune globulin A, an antibody that fights off the common cold, according to a study at Wilkes University. It's likely a result of that man's best friend thing, says James Serple, PhD and director of the Center for Interaction of Animals and Society at the University of Pennsylvania, we know that social support, or a lack of it, directly affects the body's immune system and impacts our resistance to infections and disease. A companion who acts as if it's Christmas morning every time you walk through the door, now that's a support system. Pets, they teach your kids to be nicer people. Boys and girls who live with pets are more empathetic and social than kids who don't. And allowing boys to take responsibility for feeding, walking, and grooming a dog lets them practice nurturing skills that girls typically develop while playing house. Pets, you'll breathe easier. Pets cause some folks to sneeze, to be sure. But people who grow up with pets are less likely to have allergies or asthma later on. Swedish researchers say. Other studies have found similar findings. One explanation? Early exposure to allergens, dirt, pollen, and pet dander can create a stronger immune system. One more reason to cave in when your kid asks for a kitten. You're forced to stay fit. Having a dog means you've got no excuse to blow off your daily stroll. Dog owners tend to be in better shape than people who don't have a pet to walk. But don't just take his word. I lost a little over 30 pounds by walking my dogs every day for an hour, rain, shine, 160 degrees, or 35 degrees, says reader Carol from Texas. Pets, they keep you safe. Dogs can calm down even the biggest scaredy cat. People worry less about being attacked when they have a canine companion, says researchers from the University of Cambridge, and bigger isn't necessarily better. With its super sensitive sense of sound and smell, even a small dog can tell you when something's not quite right. Pets help you feel less alone. Are you one of those people who tells her troubles to her cat? Turns out you're not nuts, you're normal. 50% of adults and 70% of children confide in their pets, according to Beck's research. Having a pet also helps children deal better with the death of a parent, says a study from the Kettering Cancer Center. You develop a sense of companionship, whether your pet is a dog, bird, or a fish. You start developing particular routines and rituals, and you get drawn into a relationship, and that relationship makes you feel as though you're not alone. You may meet new friends. Any kind of pet is a natural conversation starter, but dogs tend to take it a few steps further. Since they don't have the same social inhibitions as humans, they can literally drag you into an encounter. For most of us, that simply means getting to know the neighbors a little better. But for Melissa Peters, 35, a real estate agent in Los Angeles, California, it was truly life-changing. After checking out a cute guy at her local dog park, she used their dogs as an excuse to strike up a conversation. I started talking to Rob about his dog, and our relationship began with long walks around the neighborhood, she remembers. 3 years later, we were married. House proud. The house I grew up in is an ugly wreck. It's impossible for my mother to maintain, so why is it hard for her to leave? By Margaret Wrinkle. I was raised in an old trolley-carved suburb of Birmingham, Alabama, carved from the forest by working-class people. Back then, the forest was still trying to return. Ancient trees shaded my tiny house in tiny yards. In springtime, red bugs and magnolias bloomed in excess, and the air was heavy with perfume. It always seemed like me, a remnant of Eden. The house I grew up in, although is another story, 1,500 square feet of plain white asbestos shingle box, from its cinder block foundation to the concrete front steps, is crumbling. Nothing is quaint and charming about it, and those are just the blemishes you can see. My mother did her best to dress up its plainness by indulging in wild profusion outdoors. Our yard was a showplace of daylilies and roses. But that strategy could do nothing for the afflictions inside. My father would confess, "I'm not a handyman," his sheepish explanation for everything. From pull-down attic stairs, propped closed by 2x4s, or a crack in the windows, The house was held together by more than three decades of duct tape and wood glue. Things got even worse 6 years ago after he died. The house is now a wreck, completely surrounded by a gentrified neighborhood full of professionals with neatly pruned azaleas. And the crumbling old relic is way too much for an old woman alone to maintain. So why won't Mom agree to move on to something newer and easier to manage? She won't even consider the lovely retirement community I suggested. She comes up with all the reasons why it won't work. My parents were married for 43 years. When she finally moves out, my mother will be leaving behind her most tangible reminder of my father. When there was another project, there was always hope, hope that together they could make this a house. Leaving it would be the ultimate act of surrender. And surrender was a foreign concept to my father, who survived more than 2 years beyond his stage 4 cancer. Dad would never have given up his independence, downsized, or settled for a retirement village, and Mom knows it. That's the reason that I don't push harder to make her go. When I visit my mom, it's impossible not to think of Dad. I remember walking around our yard, weeping, the first time a boy broke my heart, and I remember my father standing at the driveway with a cherry Coke. Each time I passed him crying, he would kick his toe against it, the curb, and wait. On the night my father died, he was lying in a big bed in the corner room where he had slept for 30 years. The head of the bed was propped up with by four so he could see the TV better, leaning at an odd angle because it was the bookshelf he built to use as a bedside table. On the shelf nearest his head, where he could see it when he turned on his side to sleep, was a collection of family photos. My mother on their wedding day, me in my first communion gown. All through the long night it took my father to die, I was lying beside him, holding his hand and looking at those pictures. I'm thinking about that night. I see Mom's point. How do you walk away and watch a giant backhoe tear down a house that was the stage for all the memories of someone you love? The next article, Ways to Live for Less. Living frugally isn't about being cheap. It's about enjoying the good life, minus the damage to your wallet. Free entertainment. Many museums, zoos, and aquariums waive their admission fees one day a week or on certain dates throughout the year. Check their websites for details. If you have high-speed internet service, you can watch TV shows and free movies for free on demand at Hulu.com. That's Hulu.com. Search thousands of current and past shows and movies. Set up a free account at Pandora.com. List several of your favorite songs or artists, and a supercomputer will create personalized radio stations based on the music you love. Our last tip of free entertainment, you can often get free admission to classical music appointments, musical performances, by attending the dress rehearsals. Check the website of your city's symphony orchestra or opera company for details. An easy food tip to save money? Use your noodle. Add some veggies, herbs, and leftover meat to packaged ramen noodles, and you've got a surprisingly sophisticated soup or fried noodle dish. Adopt a pet. Instead of shelling out hundreds of dollars on a Persian or Pekingese, adopt one from the animal shelter. The recession has swelled the number of homeless animals, including purebreds. You'll save as much as $300 in vaccinations and spaying or neutering, plus another $1,000 compared to buying a puppy from a breeder. Another easy way to save money? You can save it by getting your haircuts for less. Just call a beauty academy or cosmetology school in your area and volunteer to have your hair done by a trainee. A full head of highlights may set you back only $37. You may get a haircut for $5.